Hi, I'm Mike Sklenz, and this is Nintendo World Report's Connectivity Podcast, Episode 63. This week we've got a lengthy discussion on Zombie U featuring Zach Kaplan, Scott, and Andy, and then after that, Zach Miller, Patrick, and Neil tackle some listener mail. Enjoy the episode.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this segment of Connectivity. I'm Scott Thompson. Today I'm with Andy Gergen.
What's going on?
And Zach Kaplan.
That's a zombie noise.
Zombie, or maybe just a sore throat. And if you haven't guessed by Zach Zombie,
it's a virus one way or another.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about Zombie U. I beat the game over the weekend. Andy's nearing the end of the game, and Zach's about halfway through. But the game's just so good, we didn't want to wait any longer before talking about it. I will say, I think the first half of this will be kind of just general talk, and then the second half will probably get into spoiler territory. We'll let you know when that's coming, so if you want to avoid that, you can. So, guys, let's talk a little Zombie U. Going into this game, what were your expectations? I mean, did you guys read a lot of preview coverage? Did you just kind of go into it blind?
I went into it fairly blind. I may be mistaken about this, but I kind of feel like this is one of those games where a lot of people didn't know much about the way the campaign was going to be shaped going into it. Like, I don't think that information was really out there. Or maybe it was in, like, piecemeal in interviews with Ubisoft. But
yeah,
I really didn't know what to expect. I actually thought it might be more akin to, like, Resident Evil raid mode, where you're just in an environment and zombies come at you and you survive as long as you can. Because the tagline of the game was, how long will you survive? I thought maybe it was sort of like a quote-unquote campaign built around raid mode, where you just try to survive. Or not raid mode, horde mode, sorry. Where you just try to survive as long as you can, and it's a high score thing. And maybe there's a little bit of like ham-fisted storyline built around that. But I really had no expectation that I would get such a, like, a rich campaign, like single player experience. I think maybe that's one of the reasons my impressions were so favorable right at the bat, was because I had no idea the game was going to be that rich with content, and I was pretty blown away by that.
Going up to the release of the Wii U in the game, I was pretty excited. I mean, I'm a huge fan of like The Walking Dead and zombies and stuff. But then when that day came, I was getting pretty nervous about the reviews because the review embargo wasn't out until that day.
Yeah.
And, like, the first review came from GameSpot, and they hated it. But, you know, whatever you think about GameSpot.
There's still the low mark. If you go to Metacritic or Game Rankings, no one ranked the game lower than they did. So
yeah,
it was sort of misleading that the very first review most of us saw was the worst review the game would get.
Yeah, that was unfortunate.
But I was making the decision, should I get Assassin's Creed 3 or Zombie U, but I just decided to go with Zombie U because I knew all my friends wouldn't be playing it since they wouldn't have Wii U, so decided to go with that, and I'm glad I did.
Yeah, totally. I'm in the same boat. I didn't really follow much of the game at all. I mean, I knew a little bit about it. I knew, you know, the big thing that when you died, you had to go back and get, you know, your gear back from your old self and you'd started to summon new. Like, I knew that, but like you, Andy, I didn't really understand in what context you would be doing that. You know, like, I didn't understand what the campaign would be like. And, yeah, same as you, Zach, I saw those reviews coming in and I wondered if I should, you know, still get the game or not, but I decided to do it and I'm really glad I did. And in fact, I didn't even get to play the game for probably about a week after, it came out, because I think I was reviewing Paper Mario and Your Shape and just trying to get a lot done, so I didn't have time to play it till like a week ago today. And then when I started playing it, I instantly fell in love with it.
Like, I honestly lucked out because I managed to snag the review copy of this. I think Neil was feeling a little sad that I didn't get a chance to buy the game like I had planned, and so he went ahead and promised me the review copy. The gracious soul that he is. And I didn't have any other review copies except, or any other reviews assigned to me except for like a couple of mini games and Nintendo Land, so I was able to really just get it, and then immediately after getting the system, sink my time into the single player campaign. And you know, a couple hours in, I thought, oh my god, I can't wait to talk to people about this, because everyone is concerned that this game is not any good, and it's great. And maybe not everyone will like it, but this is not a 4.5 out of 10. This is not even close. I have no idea what they were thinking with a 4 or 5 out of 10. It's not it's not even in that ballpark. And, you know, I mean, honestly, it's kind of hard to overlook the fact that I'm on the other end. Like, if you sort the reviews by positive,
are you the highest?
I'm not the highest today, I think, but I think I was the highest for a little while there. And honestly, I was very close to giving the game a 9.5, and the only reason I backed down from the 9.5 was because I thought, well, it's a new system, and there's a lot of excitement around that, and I didn't get to play as much of the game as I would have liked. I did write the review after playing about 8 hours of the campaign and about 3 hours of multiplayer. I would have liked to have gotten a lot further into the campaign before I reviewed it. It's just that the holiday was coming up and I wasn't going to get to play it again for a week. So I played those first 8 hours essentially in two sittings, most of it in one, which is really the best way to play any survival horror game, because that's those games are meant to be immersive, and that's the best way to immerse yourself, is just to sit down and don't get up until it's over.
Totally, yeah. It's like, in fact, we talked about that in our Halloween episode when we talked about scary games. And I actually had a similar, I'll let you go real quick, Zach, but I had a similar experience where this weekend my girlfriend worked from like, she works in the mall, so now they have extended hours for the holidays. So she worked from like 3 to 11, basically, and the baby went to sleep at like 7. So from 7 to 11, I really did just sit there, lights off, and just straight played like 4 hours, and it was awesome.
It's terrifying.
It really is.
I was just going to ask, Andy, did you play it lights on or off?
That's the problem, is since I was reviewing it, I didn't really have a chance to play it in the ideal survival horror situation, because I didn't get a chance to play it on the day I got my Wii because I had friends in town. So we were playing mostly – we tried some multiplayer of Zombie U, but we were mostly playing Nintendo Land. I didn't get a chance to really sink my time into the single-player campaign until the next morning. So I basically got up around like 8 and played it from like 8 to dinner time. Which means, no, I didn't get a chance to dim the lights. Because my Wii U is in my main room of my house, which has got two big windows. And my wife and kid were hanging out with me while I was playing it, so I wasn't going to make them sit in the dark all day. But I did get a chance to play at night a little bit later, so I got a couple hours in the dark. I do think that this is exactly the kind of game where you should play it in the dark if you can.
My first experiences with the game were not ideal because you guys probably know from the email, but my internet connection wasn't working very well, so after updating my Wii U for 6 hours, I finally put in Zombie U. And and the first thing that happened was, you know how at the beginning the guy, the prepper tells you to come in to the metro or whatever it's called, the tube, and well, the first thing that happened is like 5 minutes in, my Wii U hard locks and this loud sound starts coming out of it, and I'm like, did I just spend $350 on this piece of shit? And I was like, I was just ready to throw it out the window.
Very shiny and glossy brick.
Yeah.
So I guess let's talk a little bit about what the game really is, because we haven't done that yet for anyone who hasn't played the game. So like Andy said, the campaign I think is a little different than what you might be expecting. It's sort of like a open world game, I guess.
I think it's very Metroidvania, to be honest. You start in a centralized area, and you slowly branch out from the middle, and then you go back to the middle, and then you branch out in a different direction, and then you come back.
That's true.
I think it's very much like a Metroidvania style game, because there's areas you can't get to, and it's not gear that you get that unlocks those areas. It's just, well, in some cases, actually, it is, because you do upgrade your pad, and that allows you to do things like remote hack locks and so on and so forth. And
you get the lock picks. You can know, open lock doors and things like that.
In some cases, actually, it is exactly that. In other cases, it's just there is a path cleared now where there wasn't before, and there's not a super clear explanation for it, but there doesn't need to be.
Right. Well, like early on, very early on in the game, right when you leave the safe house for the first time, which the safe house is where you save your game. It's where you store, stash all your weapons and stuff that you don't want to carry with you and things like that. And it very much is the safe house, except for one moment in the game. And the very first place when you leave there, you're outside, and to the left when you walk out, there's like, I don't know, 20 zombies or something. And it's very clear, like explicitly, don't go that way. Hmm. And so instead you go, you go forward to the path ahead of you and progress that way. And then when you come back later, those zombies are mostly gone. And it's a manageable amount that you can actually pick through and then get, to a new area.
Yeah.
So even just things like that, like environmental, yeah, like you were saying, just environmental roadblocks to keep you from going astray until you get late in the game, and then really it opens up, and then you can kind of go anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, and like you were saying, Andy, before we started, but you can go back to areas you've been and find like new weapons and ammo and like stock up on supplies.
Well, the game is very unforgiving with supplies in general, but one of the cool things that it does is the map system in the game is kind of a neat idea. The whole reason you have a map in front of you is because you're hacking into these closed circuit televisions all over London. Which provide you floor plans of the areas you're going into. But another side benefit of having hacked those cameras is that you have a little computer system at your safe house which monitors when new gear shows up. And not gear, supplies, I should distinguish, because gear is like permanent upgrades and supplies is, right. It'll tell you when new supply shows up. So, you know, if you're having trouble and you don't have the weapons you need to really fully attack an area, you can always just hit up your monitors and see what new gear has, what new supplies have shown up in various areas you previously visited, which is fantastic. Now, I haven't done that a ton, and it does take a little bit of hunting once you get there to figure out where that stuff is showing up, because it's not necessarily like an obvious location, but it is a good way to stock up if you're getting frustrated by dying because you don't have enough supplies to really push on.
What I've been doing, I just wait for all my friends to die and their zombies to come into my safe.
Oh, that's
house.
So great. You know, I didn't.
That's the best way.
I didn't have Miiverse, like, ready to go for the first little bit that I played of the campaign because I hadn't done my update. I actually didn't do my update right away. I canceled out of it because I knew it would take a couple hours and I wanted to play my system before that happened. It's a totally different game with Miiverse in there. It really is. Like,
oh, yeah.
The ability to have those. Friends or whatever show up in your game and try to kill you, it adds a nice little level of social play, and it really does kind of give you an idea of what Nintendo's trying to go for with their take on social play.
Well, like,
yeah, like
zombies.
I don't want to get into this topic too heavily because this is a whole other segment we could do, but I hear a lot of other media outlets saying that the Wii U, and forgive me for this really general quote, but I do hear them say it doesn't have online, which is their way of saying it doesn't have like a Xbox Live style centralized service.
Right.
But man, Miiverse is it's a Nintendo way of doing online. It's not simultaneous multiplayer, but it is social, and it does require online connection, and it does allow you a chance to sort of talk about the game with your friends because in some way you've interacted with them, even if you don't know it.
Right. Oh, Miiverse is super handy in this game. I mean, not only does it, which if it wasn't clear, so when your friends die in their game, their zombified selves will pop up in your game, and if you find them and kill them, you'll get whatever they had in their backpack at the time, which is sometimes nothing, and then it's sometimes awesome, like tons of ammo and guns and Molotov cocktails and all that good stuff.
I killed Neil twice today. He didn't have anything either time.
Yeah, he had a rough, he sounded like he died a few times in the beginning,
yeah.
So... I came across you, Andy. You were the very first person like to pop up in my game.
I haven't seen you yet. You don't die very often.
I'm sure you'll find me. I died, yeah, more kind of where you're at now. Now I don't know if I'll have much gear, but then Miiverse is great too because you can just pull it up like if you're having a hard time with a puzzle or you can't find something, and then more than likely it's been asked recently. So you just pull up Miiverse and scroll down and someone will ask what you're looking for, and then you can just read the comments and kind of like get an idea of what you need to do.
Yeah.
Because there was one puzzle where it's like I couldn't make sense of it. Like it's to open a door and you need to find the code, and then I scanned a wall and I found like gibberish written on the wall, and I was like, well, what is this? Like, this isn't numbers. And then it turns out that later your pad's upgraded so you can decipher like
yeah.
these codes, and then it gives you what the number is.
But,
I was like, oh,
but
okay.
You could,
so then I
you could spend a lot of time trying to decipher that code before you realize that it just requires an upgrade later.
Right.
And Miiverse helped me with that too. I spent like 20 minutes trying to like figure out what the code was before I finally just posted on Miiverse, and they were like, oh, you'll just get an upgrade later for your pad and you can come back. And I was like, oh,
exactly.
Well, that's nice to know now.
Well, yeah.
How do you guys feel about the use of the Wii U gamepad? Do you like the implementation of it, or?
I do. I think I do think there's going to be a little bit of a challenge for them to come up with games where it makes sense to take your eyes off the screen. Like, I haven't played Assassin's Creed or Batman yet, but I kind of feel like the whole idea of managing your inventory, like, while the game is ostensibly still going on around you on those kinds of games, where, you know, the alternative was you just do it on, you know, with a gamepad with the buttons. I don't know that that's going to work nearly as well, but with Zombie U, the whole idea is you're vulnerable and you have to be very careful about it. So Zombie U is exactly the kind of game where that kind of disconnect actually makes a ton of sense.
Yeah.
I will say that I'm getting a little burned out on scanning. With games that have a scanning element like this, and Metroid Prime as well, and Batman, I suppose, to some extent, I feel compelled to scan everything because I don't want to miss anything, and it really slows the game down. And,
oh, yeah, and I know so you I don't, can't do that.
I know I don't have to do that, but because it's there, I feel compelled to do that. And the scanner interface isn't exactly that awesome. The gyro sensing is a little slow, and yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I love the gamepad for accessing your backpack and picking locks and that kind of stuff, because it does this really great thing where on the TV, the camera flips around and like will be like in front of your character so you can see behind him. So you'll be looking at the gamepad, like going through your backpack, let's say, or picking a lock, and then you'll glance up at the TV screen to see behind your character. And a lot of times they'll have it, you know, especially triggered where a zombie will actually be coming up behind you. So you kind of have to like, I mean, it's like really like pulling out your backpack, looking through it, and then like looking around yourself to make sure, you know, you're still safe, and then looking back through your backpack. Yeah. Like, I love that implementation of it. It's so cool and it's so tense. I mean, you know, you never feel safe, you know, even doing something as simple as just like looking through your inventory. But I agree that the gyro stuff isn't great. I didn't mind scanning because usually you're only scanning when things aren't around you. But the sniper rifle and the like mounted machine gun that you have to use a couple times throughout the campaign both require the gamepad to like aim, you know, just by tilting and rotating it. And that didn't feel so great. I didn't like that.
I just didn't like the useless touchscreen stuff where it's like you have to remove a plank by tapping it. Like,
that's true.
I thought we got over that, you know, a couple, it's 5 years ago. On
kind
the
of
GS.
Like a, it's like a quick time event, but a little bit worse.
Yeah, I do like, it does at least the same thing though, where it will flip the camera in front of you so you can see behind you, which it can build some tension, but I agree, like,
I guess I don't mind the lockpicking, because at least there's a little bit of like, it feels like you're doing something, but like the syringe and the barricades and all that, just tap the screen, you know, quickly to do the thing, that's not good.
Yeah. Yeah, that stuff is kind of lame. It'd almost be better if it just automatically did it, and it was timed, and then you were looking, you know, at the TV screen to make sure nothing was coming up around.
Well, for the syringe, you could just draw a line with your finger or stylus. I mean,
something where it's a little more like tactile.
At least it makes it feel like the kind of thing that you would actually do. You know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, so it's sort of hit or miss with the gamepad stuff, but I love inventory management and picking locks and that kind of stuff. But yeah, the tapping you get done with, and the aiming I think is not perfect.
The only real complaint I have about the campaign in general is I really like the idea of playing as different survivors you know, your survivor becoming a zombie after you die. But there is a little bit of a disconnect when every time I wake up, everyone in the game talks to me as if I'm the same person. And it really does kind of feel like, and I may have mentioned this on a previous episode, but it does kind of feel like maybe they developed the story before they developed the switching survivor mechanic, and they didn't really adapt one to fit the other.
That, or they just ran out of time, you know, and couldn't. I mean, I don't know though. I mean, would you really? Andy, we haven't revealed our death count yet. I don't know if you're ready to do that live here, but for someone like you who's died a handful of times, let's say, I mean, each time, do you want to start with, you know, being prepped as to what's going on, as if you don't know? You know, I mean, where do you find a happy medium that satisfies, like, the narrative without kind of breaking it and then not just boring you each time you start?
One possible solution is every single time you restart, there's a little montage of video screens or some sort of a video montage of scenes from the game. They could just use that montage to show your new character kind of going through the same motions your previous character did.
Yeah,
that, I guess that would. True. I mean, I think that's the implied idea, is that your new character has already sort of done some of the same things your previous character did and already had those introductory conversations with some of those characters, but it's a lot to imply, and they could show a little bit of it. They could show a little bit of that, and it would maybe make that transition a little less jarring, at least with the prepper. Some of the other NPCs in the game, there's really no way around that. Like the doctor you come across, and you get back there as a completely different person, and he still acts as if you've already had a conversation, but you clearly haven't.
I will say, it's not a spoiler or anything, but at the end of the game, The final sequence, someone's talking to on your radio. It's not the prepper, but she does say, like, I don't know if you're who I met earlier or if you're someone new, but this is the frequency I was given.
Gotcha.
And like, you know, so come here and do this. So that's kind of cool. They acknowledge it there. And yeah, I mean, it just seems like they could have done that.
Yeah. They could have put more hooks like that into the dialogue. That would have been appreciated, but it's a small complaint. And I think the mechanic is overall pretty solid.
Yeah. So I guess let's talk dying a little bit. So the main crux of the game here is that when you die, that's it. And I mean, it instantly saves unless you quit the game before you actually are like killed. I mean, there's no going back. That's it. You're a new survivor. It saves right away. And then you have a chance to go back and kill your zombified self and get all your equipment back. But if you die on your way back, then that's it. Your old zombified self is gone. All your gear is gone, and that's it. You got to just go with what you start with, which is a handgun with 6 bullets, not very much, and then whatever you had stashed away in the safe house.
And a cricket mallet.
Well, yeah, you always get the, like the cricket bat. Yeah, that's your primary melee weapon. Always have that.
It takes so long to kill the zombies with that. Just keep bashing their head in.
I think, honestly, I feel like the cricket bat's a more reliable weapon than the pistol, though, because the pistol doesn't work on all the zombies, for one. And for two, you have to really be a good, you have to be a good shot to make it effective.
Right.
Especially with only 6 bullets.
It helps if you hit him in the upper body or head, especially. You can't just shoot him in the leg a bunch and then like they'll just die. Yeah. It'll take a long time. But yeah, so that mechanic I think is pretty cool. And even though, I mean, it's, I don't know, in one way it's like, you start over. But it's not really like that big of a penalty. I mean, I guess you could lose your gear in the end. But I mean, it's not too different than just starting over. But because the game keeps track of how many times you die and score, you know, your score starts over each time you die and start something new. There's kind of that hook there to want to do well and to find it very like frustrating when you do die.
I think there's a point to be made that because there's like no backstory for each of these random survivors that you inhabit, that you wouldn't really care about them too much. But honestly... Yeah. There's a few little touches in the game that make me care about them. One of the little touches is that it tells you the profession of the person you're playing as. So
right, your name and profession.
It's not just like Sarah Jones. It's Sarah Jones, pianist, concert pianist, or Ralph Johnson, janitor. And just that little itty bit of information, like in coordination with their physical appearance that you get a glimpse of before you start.
Yeah.
It really does sort of make you be like, all right, I kind of know this person a little bit. I'm going to do my best to keep them out of harm's way. And on top of that, like you hear them grunt when they swing the cricket mallet. It's very clear that they're not prepared for this kind of, you know, combat. It makes them feel like an ordinary person. And of course the fact that the combat's just like a little bit clunky and slow drives that point home as well.
Right.
It really does make you root for these people, even though you don't know anything about them really except for their profession. And honestly, like there's been multiple times where I see someone crop up and I'm like, I like this guy. This person, I'm sticking with them for as long as I can. And of course, inevitably, I wander outside, get back to my zombified previous survivor, and immediately get slaughtered again.
Yeah.
Which is the difference between Scott and I, because we should reveal our death counts now. So
let's do that. Go ahead, Andy. How many times have you died?
So I've played the game about, I don't know my actual hour count. I'm probably close to 10 hours at this point, I think. I want to say I'm, based on what Scott's told me, I'm probably about 80% of the way through the campaign. I've died a little over 50 times. I think I've died maybe like 53 or 54 times. Usually they come in spurts. Like there's a part in the game early where your safe house is not safe anymore and you have to fend off a horde. Well,
everyone dies here. I like when I go through my news feed on in Zombie U, it will tell you if you know where your friends have died so you can go track them down, and I swear every one of my friends list has died during this part.
So like I think the idea is you're supposed there's a mounted turret in your safe house, and I think the idea is you're supposed to race out there and catch them as they're coming in, but that didn't really occur to me right away, so I was fending them off literally at the front door of my, or like the back door, my door, So there, I had like three zombies literally like 10 feet from my bed, and I would die, and then there would be another one, and then I would die.
Oh, so they actually got into your into the safe house, huh?
Well,
because when I fight them, I always fight them like just outside the safe house, like where there's those couple like little offices.
Yeah, and... well, they were inside the little – there's like a little lobby room between your actual like hideout and the little office area. They were like in there. They weren't quite inside the safe house, but they were in the closest room to it. It was like a little miniature hallway, and there was at least two or three in there. And I didn't have any weapons really at that point in the game. It was like it's early on that you don't have anything stashed really. I probably died 12 times there because I would go out, and I hadn't really gotten the hang of the combat yet, and I wasn't really patient enough for that at that point. I was confused because I actually thought it was a randomly occurring event because it happened right after I died. I think you're meant to make your way back to the save point and then it happens. I died at the end of a mission and respawned, and that was the first thing I came back to.
Oh wow.
So
okay.
I was caught off guard. I didn't know what was going on. I thought maybe it was just like a randomly occurring thing. Didn't realize that it was sort of like a narrative event in the game.
Right.
And yeah, it slaughtered me. And I think that was my first real massacre where I racked up my own body count pretty quick.
Zach, did you have trouble with that part?
Actually, I found that part pretty easy.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't have trouble with that because I just ran to that turret and just shot all of them.
See, I think that's what you're supposed to do.
So you were now the turret is facing outward. You can spin it around and shoot behind you.
Well, then I just like.
Or did you like lure him downstairs and run back up to the turret?
A little bit.
Okay, because it's facing outward. Because that well, anyway.
I just feel like in real life, if there was a zombie apocalypse, I would feel prepared after playing this game.
Yeah, that's fair. Andy, I'll agree with you that moment comes so early in the game and you really aren't acclimated to the combat yet that I think that's why everyone dies there. I just played through it on survivor mode, which so everyone knows survivor mode is where you only get one life. Once you die, that's it, game over, and then you just get your high score.
It is the campaign, though. It is identical to the campaign. Once you die, you can't even, like, it's kind of funny because once you die and you go back to your, like, game load screen, you can't even load the save file. You have to delete it and start over.
Yep. Yeah, it makes you manually delete it. Yeah, it doesn't even, like, you can't even, like, click it and it's like, do you want to start over? It's like, you can't even do anything to it. You have to manually select delete, which is kind of funny. And I found going through it this second time, having beaten the game now, that it was much easier going. I mean, it was still difficult, but because I knew all the tricks, like with flares and Molotov cocktails and like how to, you know, like board up doors and all that kind of stuff, I found I had an easier time, surviving it.
Yeah.
So, okay. So Andy died a little over 50 times. Zach, you're about halfway. How many times have you died?
Well, 27. So I'm up there.
So maybe by the time you get
you're on Andy, par,
you'll have died. you'll have died 50 sometimes. See, now I want to talk to more people because I beat the game only dying 7 times.
See, I think maybe it's sort of a deal where, and this is not meant to disparage your incredible skills because I am thoroughly, thoroughly impressed by that. But I do think that maybe it's a situation where the longer you survive with one of your guys, the longer you will survive because you can level up your survivors. You can make them more skilled with weapons. And, you know, the more you level up, the easier it is to progress in the game because the better equipped your character is. So if you keep dying all the time, you don't get to keep any of those those level upgrades. So you're never going to get any better at using those weapons. So I do think it's one of those things where if you can kind of break through the barrier and maybe get leveled up in a few different weapons, and if you're alive enough to be able to, like, stock up on some ammo and keep those weapons handy, I think you could survive for longer than I did for pretty much any of my characters.
Well, my longest character was 3.5 hours long, and surprisingly, I didn't even level up that much because that was kind of like the middle point of the game. He was my third character, and he lasted me until about like the halfway point. But because I didn't use guns that much because ammo was so spare, I'd only leveled up once with my handgun, and that was it. But I did actually have a good stockpile of weapons back at the safe house because all I'd carry was the handgun and a shotgun. So I had machine guns and I think the sniper rifle like stacked, you know, stashed at my safe house. So that was nice. Not that I ever, when I would die, I never lost my gear. I was always able to get back and reclaim my gear. But I did have that, like, that stock just in case. So that was helpful.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
The little metal containers that are littered all over the game, are you meant to be using those as additional stashes?
The metal containers.
There's like dumpsters and lockers. There's all kinds all kinds of little stash areas throughout the game, but I've never had enough stuff to really justify stashing stuff there.
You know, I don't know. I don't know if you put things in there, if it's still there when you die or like when you, you know, load.
There's so many of them that you almost have to feel like they're there for a reason.
Yeah, it could be. It really could be. That's maybe an experiment with trying putting something in there and then coming back for it later, see if it's still there.
Like,
yeah, maybe I'll have to try
that. I even found like a little like safe room in the church catacombs area that I'm in, and the only thing in there was some ammo, I think, and a dumpster. And I'm thinking there's got to be a reason that this dumpster is there. It's empty. All of these things are empty. There's hardly ever anything stashed in any of them.
That's true.
But they're everywhere. There's like empty lockers, empty dumpsters, empty foot lockers, empty suitcases. Makes you just feel like you should be using these to stash stuff.
Right.
Maybe there was originally more zombies, so they gave you more ammo. They just took them out.
Maybe.
That's what I'm thinking.
Oh, maybe. Like, maybe they had planned to, the developers had planned to put more stuff in those, but then...
Maybe you can unlock a hard mode.
Well, survivor mode is supposed to be the hard mode.
I do think...
But I don't think it increases difficulty at all, just, you know...
I do think it's incredible that the ZombiU dev team is leaving messages inside the game for people.
I wanted to mention that. That's so cool. Yeah. Like, I've never really seen a developer do that in any game across any system.
So the first thing that I saw was, like, a day after launch, of course, the early reviews for the game were particularly mixed. I think the reviews, I think especially because GameSpot's was an early review, the first couple of days the game was out, the reviews were not looking good. And then I think as more reviews came out, they started to skew high because it's a good game. The more people that review it, the more people will say it's a good game. But because some of the reviews were early, I think the dev team was frustrated because the game was being reviewed like it was a shooter, and it's not a shooter. And so the very first thing that I saw from the dev team was I looked down at the safe house, the floor of the safe house, and there's a message that says, "Heads up, ZombiU is a survival horror." Signed, the dev team.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, well, there you go. In case you weren't aware, this is not a shooter. It is a survival horror game.
Right. And
when you think of it in terms of like the same kind of game as an old school Resident Evil, it becomes a lot more palatable. Because if you really if you think it's a shooter and you play it like it's a shooter, you're going to be frustrated early and often.
Right, because you're going to instantly run out of ammo and just be boned.
Yeah.
It's very much I kind of played it almost like a stealth game in a way. Like, I was always careful entering rooms. I was constantly, scanning with my radar and stuff to make sure nothing was around. And then if there were zombies, I would kind of carefully try to, like, get near one enough that it would see me but the others wouldn't. And then I would, like, pull it back into a hallway that I knew was clear and then just, like, pick it off and then kind of slowly do that.
Yeah.
Which I think is kind of how you have to play that, or just kind of, like, run, or just avoid the zombies altogether. But you definitely can't. You really, like, if you come across more than two zombies, you're going to die, or you're going to have to really use a lot of, like, your ammo and stuff, a lot of your supplies.
Yeah.
You know, you can toss a flare, which then all the zombies go to the flare for a little bit of time, and then, you know, you could hit them with a grenade or a Molotov cocktail or something, or just run away. But, yeah, you can't just go in guns blazing. And I like that. I mean, it really is, like, just a great survival horror game, and considering we haven't really had one in such a long time, like, I just played Resident Evil 6 in October when that came out. I played that for about an hour and then I sold it on eBay for $50 to some dummy. So I only lost $10. So it's like I kind of rented it for a weekend or two. So I can live with that.
Well, Revelations came out this year.
Revelations was good because
think it was ZombiU good, but it was
No, I don't think so either. No. But it was a nice like medium. But ZombiU is great. It's just frightening. It really is. Like besides that time where I played 4 hours in a row that one night, I've never really like been able to play for long chunks of time because it's just so intense.
Yeah. So like, I don't know if this would be considered spoilers. I know we're going to move into spoilers eventually, but
yeah, let's go ahead and say now that we're going to move into spoilers. So I'd say from here on out, if you don't want to know any, you know, critical parts of the story or like even just set piece moments, go ahead and turn it off now and go buy the game and play it because you're stupid if you don't.
So I had read, numerous people had said that there was a nursery later in the game. And yes. So I was anxiously looking forward to it, and sure enough, eventually I did find it. And it's sort of set up so you're trying to get this medicine to trade for fuel, and the medicine's in the nursery, and you go into the area where the nursery is. So sort of the general area is there's this large courtyard, and you have to sort of jump off a platform to get there, so you can't leave the way you got there. And that's key because I didn't know that at first. It didn't dawn on me. So you cross the courtyard, and you go into the nursery, and the nursery is just the creepiest thing. It is just so incredibly creepy. And it has some of those classic Resident Evil jump scares, but they're just so well done. And also, it's the closest thing the game has to a boss fight so far. And I'm not going to spoil too much of what that is, because if you haven't played this yet and you're still listening, you deserve to find out what that's like. And I know Zach hasn't gotten that far yet either. But
well, no, have you not done the nursery yet, Zach?
No, I haven't.
That's past. Oh, okay, that's past where he's at. Yeah,
that's right. It's probably the next big thing after you get through with the tower.
You're awfully close.
Yeah,
it's like the next major mission that you're going to go on.
So
you know, like I said, I've died a lot in this game, and whenever I know I'm going to go into an area where a lot of people have been hyping it up on Miiverse and on the internet, I know I'm going to die a whole bunch. But I actually didn't. I got into the nursery, and I did a lot of exploring the area. I learned early on that there was an exit on the second floor, which is key. I accidentally left the building and had to go back in.
I did that too. I was like, it locks behind
you. Well, I didn't even know it locked behind me. I jumped off there's like a broken stairwell, and I just jumped off of it, and I was like,
if you try to go back in, it's locked. Okay. You can't get in from the outside.
So anyway, I actually did a really good job in the nursery. I even got into there's a code room in the basement, and I got in the code room, and I got some cool stuff, and there's mm-hmm. a scuba zombie there that you have to worry about too, and I dealt with him, and it's a dangerous, dangerous place to be. I actually made it out alive. I made it all the way back to the other end of that courtyard, and that's when I learned that you can't go out the way you came in. Yeah. And there wasn't a lot of zombies around me, but I had to figure out how to leave, and I finally noticed there's another door there, but it's the kind of door where you have to scan it and let the prepper hack it remotely for you. And of course, that particular one, he says, well, this one will take me a minute. So of course, what happens? You get attacked by zombies, and that's when I died. So I got all the way in and out, and I got attacked by zombies. Now, that in and of itself is bad. I was pretty proud of myself. That was my new high score at that point. But I also knew that when I got back there, it would probably be pretty easy to get my stuff back, because there really wasn't any zombies there except for the ones that came while he was hacking the door for me.
Who just spawned in for that.
Exactly. So I go back, and at that point, I hadn't unlocked the shortcut yet, so it was a long way back, and there had spawned some new zombies in the path to get there. I think simply because the game thought I would be heading back that way, so it put new obstacles in play. But I didn't catch them on the way back. I caught them on the way to the place again. So I was already kind of dinged up by the time I got to where my gear was. And I got in there, and I went in the door on that little platform, and I jumped off. And sure enough, I saw my former zombified self there. And it was just him, and he was just standing there alone, not even seeing me, his back to me. And I'm like, this is going to be pie, but I don't really want to risk screwing it up. So I pulled out a Molotov cocktail, and I tossed it. And there must have been some piece of scenery that I didn't see.
Oh, no.
And I burned myself to death and lost all of my stuff.
Oh, man. So it just exploded right in front of you, basically.
Yep, it just shattered right in my hand, basically. And I burned to death, and all of my stuff was gone.
Wow.
I haven't seen this anywhere else, but did you guys encounter the dancing zombies?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why isn't anyone talking about that?
It's so great. That's a really good point. I don't know, because it's awesome.
It is awesome. Yeah, so there's one point where you're like going through, you're trying to get to a guy's apartment to collect something, a code or a piece of paper or something. And so you're going through an apartment building, and as you approach the apartment building, as you're going through it, you hear this like loud thumping, just like trance music, basically, like house music. And then I don't even think I think the game does kind of push you through it. I think you have to go into that room.
Yeah.
But you open it, and there's just like crazy like lights, like it's a rave, and the zombies are just like,
and there's like eight of them.
Yeah, but they're all just like kind of shuffling next to each other and just like staring at the lights and like kind of just like going with the music. And you can actually turn the music off if you're
really
crazy enough to do it. Yeah, you can go to the DJ equipment and turn the music off, and then they all just turn and run at you. So don't do that. But yeah, so you can either just kind of like go right past them, because even when they see you, because like there's one who's kind of away from the pack. And I was like, well, if I hit it, like, does it just kind of snap out of it and come after me? But even if you hit it like with your cricket bat, it kind of like reacts, and then it just starts sort of like shifting side to side again and kind of dancing.
I actually awesome. Threw a Molotov cocktail at the entire group.
I did too.
And backed out and closed the door and went back in about 30 seconds later, and all but one of them were dead.
Beautiful. Yeah, I did that too. That or a grenade, one or the other.
Yeah, that's one of the more memorable moments of that game. I really loved the lighting effects in that room were really cool.
Yeah, it was on like, because the game is so dark and like ominous throughout. I mean, you constantly have to have your flashlight on for the most part, except for like a few maybe outdoor places. But yeah, you just go into that and it's just completely different. It's a totally unique moment. You never see it like replicated again.
Kind of along the same lines, the thunderstorm early in the game when you're trying to go to Buckingham is really well done. I loved the rain and the lightning. It was a really cool effect. I died a lot there too, trying to get into the palace was a nightmare for me. I probably died a good 5 to 10 times.
That's where I first found your zombie. So I figured that was
sounds about right. I think that's when I finally started to learn that if you died, you didn't get your stuff back. Because I think until then, I still thought you could always go back and find it. That's when I learned the hard way.
If you die again, it's gone.
Right.
Yeah.
What did you guys think of the graphical style? Because a lot of reviewers were complaining that it looked bad. And I didn't think that, but maybe it's because I'm kind of a Nintendo-only gamer, so I'm not used to the HD and the...
I think the style is fine. I think the stylistically the game is great. There are some really low textures. I think back to Silent Hill Shattered Memories, and one of the things I loved about that game was the text in the game was very clear. And even though it was standard definition, you could walk up to a sign and read it. The problem with Zombie U is a lot of the signs are really, really low-res, blurry textures, and you can't necessarily read them. So they probably shouldn't be there. Some of the textures are a little bland, but I don't know. It's post-apocalyptic London. You're in a lot of sewers. You're in a lot of underground caverns. You're in a lot of, you know, torn-up buildings. It doesn't have to be that creative. It just has to be effective. And anybody who thinks it's not effective is crazy. I think the decor in the game is incredibly effective at setting the mood. And there's a lot of little touches like doors that kind of like when you first see the underground train, like one of the doors is like opening and closing on its own. That's a cool effect. And there's a lot of things like that, that I think really add to the overall flavor of the graphical style. I think in general, it's very well done. Even if some of the details are a little muddy.
Sure. Yeah, no, I totally agree. Like it's kind of ugly at times. And there's a weird little, like, technical glitches. Like, one time I was running around, a zombie got, like, stuck on top of a box, and he couldn't, like, jump down to get me, so he was just stuck up there.
Yeah.
So I just, like, you know, easily killed him. Like, there's little things like that, but I don't think it takes you out of the game, and I really think the look of the game, if anything, just pulls you in more.
Yeah.
So, no, it's not the prettiest game. You know, if you go from this and then go play, like, Dead Space 2, I mean, Dead Space 2 just blows it out of the water. But it's effective and it does what it sets out to do. So, I'm happy with that.
I'd love to see a sequel to this game. I think there's so much more they can do with the feature set. Like, I don't know how the story ends, but I'm sure they can, you know, tell another story in this version of London, no problem. And you know, this game is screaming for online co-op. Seriously, survival horror this kind of a survival horror with online co-op would be great because it would really give you a chance to sort of try to, you know, strategically organize a good approach and a way forward and try to help you. I mean, Resident Evil 5 had the same kind of idea, but it was such an action game. You didn't have time to do a lot of that stuff when you're under attack. I mean, the survivalist nature of this game would bring a lot to a co-op experience.
Yeah. If I had one problem, it was that I haven't finished the campaign yet, but besides the campaign and the survival mode, which is just the campaign, if you don't have anyone else to play with, that's kind of it. I mean, it would have been nice if there was something like Resident Evil has their raid mode or whatever it's called. Or the mercenaries kind
mercenaries.
Of.
Mercenaries, yeah.
That would have been nice.
I feel like survival is sort of the idea there. You try to play through as far as you can. But the problem with survival mode is you have to watch the cutscenes every single time. And that's really annoying.
Right, and it absolutely is just, I mean, it's just the campaign again. So yeah. It was kind of cool for me to go back to it, like, knowing what I know now, like, revisiting those earlier parts. But, like, I actually died early on, it's just stupidly. So I started survivor mode over again, like, I was, like, 15 minutes in. And, yeah, to just have to sit and do it all again, like, I think it will discourage, you know, trying it more than once or twice. Because you're going to get sick of those earlier portions of the game.
Yeah.
So that's kind of unfortunate there, but... Yeah, no, I really do. I wanted to bring up too. I like the you know, you mentioned, Andy, like the variety of like decor and stuff and how they kind of use some things sparingly, and I think they do that with the zombies too, which I really like. Like early in the game, you come across one of the zombies who like screams and alerts other zombies, and then after that, you don't actually see one for a long time.
Yeah.
Until later in the game, and it does that with a couple of like the different zombies that you come across. Like you said, the scuba zombie. Who I will just tell everyone now, because I was really mad when this killed me. So this is a good spoiler. If you hit them with your melee weapon, they just explode and kill you. So do not hit them with your melee weapon. Run away and shoot them from a safe distance. And like the very first one you come across, like it just comes right up into your path and there's just no way of knowing. And it made me so mad. But even those are just sort of like used, you know, sparingly. And I like that. It's like they had a lot of good ideas and then they don't overdo it.
Yeah.
And then even that, well, I don't know. I don't know how much you want spoiled about what you come across, you know, at the end of the game. So maybe I won't talk about that yet since you're not there yet. But I will just say that the ending sequence of the game is super intense. And one thing it does have you do is you can't use your, like the sewer system anymore to like fast travel from place to place. So you have to go from one location all the way back to your safe house, like on foot through each environment.
Oh God.
Which is fucking intense.
Yeah, I would imagine. So, what if you die? What if you die?
Then you're back to the safe house, and the thing that you had that you needed, you actually can't go back and get. So there's three endings to the game. The one ending is during the end game sequence. If you die, then that's it. Game over. Like what's happening just happens. If you make it all the way back from where you were with what you were carrying, then that's like the good ending. Or if you get to where you're going but you don't have that item, then that's like the middle, like kind of bad ending.
Interesting. So if you get the worst ending, is there any way to get a better ending without replaying the entire game?
Okay, so there's like a long end game sequence where if you die, that's fine. You just start as a new survivor like normal. But then the very end of the game, you have to evacuate. I mean, that's not that much of a surprise. And if you die during that part, like that's it. Then the evacuation happens and you're just not there.
And you can't restart it after the credits and try again.
No, I don't believe so. Yeah. I don't know maybe it'd start you from the last time you saved. But I guess, you know, it depends when you saved, how far back that might set you. I'm not sure. I'd have to go check my old save.
So what you're saying is, see where it starts me. Get a USB stick, copy your save file to the USB stick, and then attempt the ending.
Yeah, exactly.
I've done that. Actually, yeah, I did learn that if you copy your save file to the USB, it'll still read it. So if you want to start another game, because I had a friend in town this weekend, and I wanted to show him the game, but I didn't want him to show him like where I was at. I wanted him to kind of go through the beginning. I had to copy my save to the USB drive and then physically remove the USB drive from the system and then let him start his game.
That's true, because, yeah, you only have one save file, basically. Right. So, yeah, you can't just start a new one.
It's a little convoluted, but...
Yeah.
That's one way to... Can you... Actually, I'm not sure if you can copy a save file. I think you have to move it, which would mean that you can't just copy your save file to USB and then store it safe.
Right, it would just move it, and then when you go back, you just wouldn't have
anything.
So you are...
Oh, man. That's even more incentive to replay it and try to do better, because I don't want to get the shitty ending after all this time.
Yeah. The biggest thing is to get back to the safe house without dying. Otherwise, you lose that key item, and then you get like the mediocre ending. So
that's terrifying. That part,
I know it is. It really is. I mean, it's so good. I loved it. That whole ending sequence is just so intense. I don't want to spoil it for you guys, but you just look forward to it. It's hard. It's scary, and it's perfect. I mean, it's what you'd expect from this game.
Yeah.
So. All right. Well, I think that will about do it. I think we've gone on a pretty good amount of time about this one game, but I'm not, you know, I'm not mad we did because this game is awesome.
Scott, if you were reviewing this game, what score would you give it?
You gave it a 9, right? Yeah. I think I'd be right there. I'd write it 8.5 to 9, I think. I couldn't go any higher just because some of the technical hiccups. But yeah, I'm right there. I loved it. I mean, I'm excited to go through Survivor Mode, and I think I might write an editorial about this game, and I want to see a sequel. And yeah, I'm just totally like in love with it right now.
I feel like this is like literally one of the best launch games I've seen in a really long time. Wii Sports was great, but it was what it was. I mean, it wasn't the kind of game you went back to, except for when you had family over. This is a deep single player. This kind of reminds me of Rogue Squadron. It's maybe the best launch game since Rogue Squadron, I think.
Mm-hmm. Twilight Princess.
Yeah, that wasn't really a launch game. I mean, it was, but it doesn't qualify for my discussion.
Yeah. I mean, that game was in development forever, so they damn well should have been good.
I love Twilight Princess. That game gets unfairly maligned way too much. I do love Twilight Princess.
But I do think this game's great, and I think it'll be one of those games that, apart from people who get the Wii U right now, it'll probably be sort of like a hidden gem, you know? It's just, the reviews weren't great. It's a game I think a lot of people will just be like on the fence and don't want to make that plunge.
I do think it's the third best disc-selling game behind Nintendo Land, which is bundled, and Mario.
Is it really?
I read that it was the third best. I think it was like number 17 on the NPD, so there wasn't a lot of top-selling Wii U software. But it was up there.
That's awesome.
If anything, this will end up being the Wii U Steel Diver. So, in my eyes, that's a good thing because I love Steel Diver.
I know, isn't that your Miiverse name?
Yeah, Steel Diver is the greatest launch game since Super Mario 64.
Wow, I don't know about anything that's being said right now.
I think that's a little crazy. I've actually never played it though. Maybe I should try to check it out.
Maybe that's some high praise though.
Well, happy zombie hunting to you both and to anyone listening. If you would like to kill my zombified corpse and collect my small amount of loot that I have since the last time I died, you can add me on Miiverse at DrewMG, DrewMG.
Yeah, and then as I said, well, Zach is Steel Diver. Yeah. It's just a wonderful Miiverse name. And then I am OK Soda. I think I'm almost at like 70 friends, so I think I've got 30 open spots. So if you want to add me, do
it. Same
while
here.
The soda is still good.
Yeah, well, exactly, before it's flat. go play Zombie U because it's awesome. And I really hope the team gets a chance to like take a lot of time and really work on a good, like, thorough sequel.
I know that the dev team is paying attention to reviews because two members of the dev team actually like retweeted the NWR review Twitter post.
Oh, that's awesome. Great. I actually said something about the game on Twitter, and then two of the dev guys retweeted me too.
There you go. They're watching. They're paying attention. They're prepping for a sequel.
They're like the Braid guy who went around everywhere and commented.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's cool. You can tell that it's a project they love. So I hope it does well, which it sounds like it might be if it's the third best-selling game. So cool stuff. All right, guys. Well, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.
There you go.
welcome to Listener Mail on Connectivity. I'm your host, Neil Ronahan, and with me, as somewhat usual, got Patrick Barnett, who just can't wait to go to the Lego City. Yeah. And Zach Miller, who probably doesn't even know what the fuck was announced at the Nintendo Direct today.
Just got home.
Yeah, I had a feeling.
Is it anything earth-shattering? Because I was
Pikmin
3
was delayed.
Nothing big.
Pikmin 3 was delayed.
No shit. What?
Yeah, I know. Big surprise. And then a Fire Emblem is coming out on February 4th. Brain Age Concentration Training is coming out on February 10th.
Come on, stuff I care about.
And that's the only confirmed dates.
Oh, a Dead or Alive character is coming to Ninja Gaiden 3.
Yeah, Kasumi.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Well, that won't make me buy the game, but cool.
All right, well, yeah, I guess we can spend a little time on the Nintendo Direct. The other stuff that we got, the Wii U games that were kind of highlighted that look like they're shoo-ins for Q1 are Lego City Undercover, which I'm not really shy about the fact that the E3 demo was fucking terrible. And, I mean, it's just like from an unproven developer, I can't put that much stock into that game until I see or play something that's like concrete being like, all right, so this concept is pretty cool, and this game is actually good. And the other game is Game & Wario, which has some novel ideas. I mean, the demo that they had at E3 that's circulated at other events.
It's horrible. You know,
it's kind of fun, but not
It's
not like anything that I think I would play a lot, although I do love the idea of the game that they revealed today, which is, I forget the name of it, but...
The Thief one? That one. Is that what you mean, or...
No, well, that's Fruit. That's
Fruit,
the one that's like Spy Party.
Are you talking about the one where it was a bunch of micro games and you're like pretending to be asleep?
Yeah. And, like... So basically, Zach, the way this works is that on the TV, it's like, I guess, 9-volt and he's in bed.
Okay.
And he has his gamepad up and he's playing that. And then you play micro games on the gamepad. And then, like, when your mom walks by on the screen, you like put the gamepad down and pretend that you're asleep.
I see.
And she goes away, and then you go up and play micro games again.
Oh. Uh-huh.
So it's like there's a WarioWare game in a WarioWare game.
That's weird.
Yeah. But I wonder how many micro games will actually be in that mini game.
Oh, yeah.
They could do something kind of cool with that.
But, I hope there's at least maybe one or two other modes. Like, they said there were 16 mini games in Game & Wario. I'm hoping at least two or three of those are, like, micro game collections.
Yeah. So other stuff that was going on with the Nintendo Direct is Pikmin 3 is delayed, which is bullshit.
Huh.
But not surprising. It looks really, really good, though. They showed off some new stuff. And then, what else was there? Wii Fit U. That might be a March release. They're just saying first part of 2013, I think. Animal Crossing was not mentioned. Neither was Nintendo TV. We found out that Harmonite and Tokyo Crash Mobs are coming out in the beginning of next year, and that Luigi's Mansion might be a March release. We don't even know.
Oh, wow.
They were really vague with a lot of release dates today.
Are they going to support this system they just put out?
Maybe. I mean, it's looking pretty barren. They did say that 30 games were coming out over the next few weeks, which I don't even know if I know if there's 30 other games announced for the system right now.
Maybe they're counting each DLC table for Zen Pinball 2.
Yeah. Then I mean, they might be halfway there already.
Console? Because I missed that.
No. So let's get to the listener mail.
Yeah, let's do that.
Kick us off, Zach.
Okay, our first email is from Kentucky Tim. He sent in about 100 questions, so I'm just going to read each one, and we'll answer each one separately. Do you think we will get games like Pandora's Tower and Disaster Day of Crisis on the North American Wii U eShop? No.
Not at all. Never. At least not for a while. Maybe a couple years down the line when they actually feel like creating a virtual console.
Yeah, agreed. I don't really think there's... I don't even know if they'll really come over anytime soon. I could see them getting a Sin and Punishment treatment in like 10 years.
Yeah.
On the Wii U too.
Yeah.
the Super Wii.
Yeah. The Super Wii 64.
He says, do you think the games that are going to be released in 2013 will be announced for the Wii U, such as Dead Space 3, Tomb Raider, and Metal Gear Rising Revengeance. Well, I know Metal Gear won't be because that's a Xbox exclusive. It would sure be nice if Dead Space 3 came to the Wii U.
Metal Gear Rising isn't a 360 exclusive.
Oh, it's not?
No.
Oh, I think the demo just hit the PS3, didn't it?
Yeah. Oh,
seriously? Wow.
It's coming out for both systems.
Well, I am behind the times.
But I don't think that game will be coming to Wii U. Although, you know what? I could see that maybe coming
Bayonetta
in like
2 is coming to the Wii U.
I mean, I could see Revengeance maybe coming as like a subsistence version down the line. Because of Platinum Games, you know, being very familiar with the system, or at least they will be after Wonderful 101 and Bayonetta 2 come out.
Right.
Dead Space 3, like, I wouldn't be surprised either way, but I wouldn't bank on it, because it seems like EA's not really interested in doing anything with the Wii U.
That's true. And I'd get it on PS3 anyway, because I have the other two on PS3.
Yeah. And then Tomb Raider, I think, is a pretty likely candidate for coming out in alongside the game, because there was that rumor about Tantalus, the guys who ported Funky Barn to Wii U, and also Mass Effect 3, but they had a listing on LinkedIn or something that said that they were also working on porting a Square Enix game to Wii U, like a major third part or a major AAA game, and Tomb Raider is an Eidos game, which is now Square Enix. So I think it's probably that. Maybe it's like a remake or like a port of an older Eidos game, like maybe Deus Ex or Hitman, but who knows?
Well, I think it's been delayed so often that I just wonder if they're working on a Wii U port.
Yeah, maybe.
It's not on his list here, but I'm still kind of hoping for a BioShock Infinite coming over to Wii U.
There's been a bunch of stuff with, I think Reggie making comments about how like Take-Two is kind of on board with Wii U. But the only game we've seen from them is the NBA 2K13. That's the only thing they've really talked about. I know Borderlands 2 was discussed. I think Randy Pitchford responded about why that wasn't on Wii U, and it was plainly because they couldn't think of anything to do with the other screen, and they didn't want to just make a port for the sake of making a port.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if that's the freedom that developers are being allowed early on in the system's life, one, that kind of sucks, and two, that means that maybe BioShock Infinite won't get ported because they can't think of anything to do with the second screen that's meaningful, which
well,
I like.
I kind of have a problem with that. Why couldn't they do item management on the second screen for Borderlands? Because there is so much loot in those games.
Very true.
The game is loot.
Yeah, I mean, then you'd just be playing the entire game on the gamepad, literally, because you'd be going through the loot and being like, oh shit, I need to shoot some people. I mean, I think people kind of undervalue how cool just playing on the gamepad is, so like, I'd rather
have it in
BioShock Infinite on Wii U, because then I can, you know, play it on the big screen, and you know, if someone wants to watch TV, I can bring it on down.
Well, if Darksiders is any indication, you'd want to play a game like that or Dead Space 3 on a pro controller. Just saying.
Well, some games you can play off screen with the pro controller. You can do that with Assassin's Creed.
Oh, that's bizarre.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, let's keep going. Do you think the recently announced Metal Gear Solid Ground Zeroes will become a Wii U game? Dude, I don't know what kind of game that's coming out as right now.
Maybe.
Maybe someday in the far future when it actually comes out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Moving on.
I don't even know what that game is. I watched the trailer fully confused.
It looks good?
Yeah, it does look good. About all you can say about it. Okay, two more questions. When do you see Nintendo selling the gamepad by itself? How much will it sell for when this happens? Well, first off, I don't see it happening.
Well, it will, because eventually games will support two gamepads.
Maybe you'll probably have to buy the second gamepad through Nintendo.
No.
I don't think so.
No?
I think it'll be next holiday. They'll start.
Yeah.
That'll be their Christmas thing. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, maybe a little later than that, but I think it's like an inevitability. Like that will definitely happen. That you'll be able to get the gamepad by itself and use two gamepads with the system, as I said at E3 last year.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
But
it'll
I think
more than $85.
Yeah,
which is
I think
how
at
much
the very
it costs
at the
them.
Very earliest, I'd say next August, because it would be perfect for Madden.
Oh, yeah, it would.
But yeah, so Zach knows that I guess the base price of a gamepad is $85. So
got it back more than that. With an invoice, yeah, more than that. Probably $100.
Yeah.
I'd say more than $100.
I can see $125.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, last question. Would it make sense for Nintendo to charge something like $29.99 to all Wii users to allow them to upgrade their WiiWare and Virtual Console games to function on the gamepad?
No, fuck them.
If that were that expensive, I'd say screw it.
I would probably buy it.
I would still bite, but I wouldn't be happy about it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I don't think they would do it either.
If that was an option on day one, maybe I would have been like, okay, that's all right. But if they're not going to have it there at launch and then they're going to charge you for it later, like, that's bullshit.
That just needs to be a patch.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they'll do the same thing that Sony did with PlayStation support on Vita, where, you know, just they wanted time to, you know, get their ducks in a row and have it be, you know, actually work properly on it, because that's the reason why that took so long, is because they wanted to, I guess, test the emulation of certain games.
Oh, okay, well, that's funny, because, was it the Final Fantasy game that Guillaume was playing on the Vita had that, like, broke down?
He wasn't playing it on Vita. That was on his PSP Go, I think.
Yeah, that's just a problem with that game.
I see.
But, I mean, as we know, the Virtual Console games all have their own emulator inside that I don't know if it's necessarily custom built for each game, but it's, you know, it's included in each game. So in order to make that work on Wii U and have added functionality, like, you know, being able to be played on the gamepad, they kind of have to like go through and test everything again.
Yep.
And that's going to take time. And unfortunately, when they're already rushing the damn thing at the door and it's not, all the features already aren't ready, you know what? That's going to be on the back burner.
Yeah.
So it will likely happen at some point. We don't know when. Sure. It could be, you know, at the beginning of next year. It could be fucking holidays next year. Could be even later than that.
Yeah.
As long as it happens at some point in the future, I'll be somewhat satisfied.
Yeah, yes. Agreed.
Agreed. So that's Kentucky right. Tim's question. So thank you, Kentucky Tim, and please write again.
Yeah.
Always like hearing from you.
All right. So our next letter is from Pure Evil. I have been a little bummed out recently, partly because I was not able to get a Wii U at launch, and unless a miracle happens, will not be getting one anytime soon. With my Twitter feed, favorite websites, and podcasts being full of nothing but Wii U, I'm starting to feel a little left behind. Heck, no one seems to be sending out swap notes anymore. I was wondering if any of you guys have been left behind at a console launch before and what you did to get through it.
With the Game Boy Advance, and then I got a Game Boy Advance. True story. I was like, I'm not going to get one. And then I went to school and a bunch of my friends had Game Boy Advances. I'm like, well, fuck this. I need to get a Game Boy Advance.
With the Wii, I kind of got left behind slightly. I wasn't able to get it on launch day or at Christmas time that year. And it was like we had the money all saved up for it. And
you just couldn't find it.
We couldn't find it anywhere. And we made it till January, whatever the last day in January was. We were at a Walmart and I was just walking around and they just had one sitting there on the shelf. And it was just this moment of panic where my parents weren't there with me. So I didn't have my money on me. And I just was just like running up and down the aisles of Walmart to go get my money and buy the Wii.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think because 3DS and Wii, I both got on launch day. GameCube, I got that Christmas. So I guess it was technically left behind for like a month. But I had a friend who had it, so I just go over his house and play. I got the DS at launch as well. N64 I didn't get for like 6 months.
Oh, me neither,
I had a friend down the street who had Super Mario 64, and that's pretty much all I needed.
Yeah, same thing with me. I had a friend who lived in the neighborhood who had Mario 64 and Wave Race, and it was like whenever I wanted to play it, I just went to his house.
But I think, like, I mean, especially with Wii U, because Wii's virtually been dead since March, it's really kind of exacerbated just how much of a leap there is, like, when people get Wii U's compared to the Wii. I mean, it's a lot different than people who didn't get 3DSs right away, because you still had quality DS games coming out. I mean, the month that the 3DS launched, you had Pokemon Black and White, Monster Tail, and Okami Den. and Radiant Historia had just come out the month before. Like, those are honestly some of the best games on the system. With the Wii,
you get Radiant Historia.
Oh, it's fantastic. So I think that when I refer to them being the best games on the system, I really think Radiant Historia is the only one out of that group.
Well, I would consider that comment in that bunch.
I'm sorry.
I liked it.
I wasn't that big of a fan. But anyway, with the Wii, I mean, the last relevant new release was Mario Party 9 in March.
Kirby game, Kirby.
Well, I mean, there was a Kirby compilation, there was Pikmin 2, but technically those games came out anywhere from, you know, 20 to 5 years ago.
Xenoblade, that's the big
one. Xenoblade was April.
And the last story, I guess, if you want to count that.
Okay, so my memory was a little off, but even still, I mean, that's what, there were fucking 5 games throughout an entire year on the system.
That's more than the Vita. Bazinga!
Yep.
Was that the whole email? It is. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
by the way,
sorry,
I don't use SwapNote anymore because it's so time consuming.
Yeah.
Plus, everyone's moved to Miiverse.
I have almost erased SwapNote about 7 times.
I think the best advice we can give you, Pure Evil, is just go hope for Miiverse to come to 3DS soon, because that would make people use SwapNote again, or at least something similar.
Also, you don't need both kidneys. I'm just saying.
So let's move on to the final letter of the segment. From Hey, It's Me. Now that you guys have played the... Hey, It's Me!
Oh.
Now that you guys have played the Wii U, what Nintendo franchise do you see coming back for the system? With the Wii, Nintendo had the amazing Excite series. Also, do you think we will see another wave race anytime soon? I played the N64 one to death on Virtual Console. First off, I would love to see a new wave race. I actually never played the N64 version, but I love the shit out of Blue Storm.
Oh, I love the N64 game.
Yeah, I just never played it, and then I got a Blue Storm the holiday that I got a GameCube. I mean, that's a series I would love to see come back. Same with, you know, F-Zero would be another one. That I think is more likely than we might think. I think some of the franchises used in Nintendo Land kind of give a good indication of what we might potentially see, because it seems like some of those were... I mean, not that we're going to see an F-Zero game where you hold the gamepad on its side and tilt it from left to right, and that's how you steer. But just having those franchises kind of come back to mind, then we could see them go somewhere with some of those, possibly. I think the Yoshi's Island style game, probably from Good Feel. I think some of those rumors are like kind of just people making shit up.
It needs to happen.
But I think that game's going to happen.
That rumor, they actually found that, I think, on Miiverse itself.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's legit, but I think the people being excited about like Best Buy Canada having a listing or whatever, or I don't know who it was exactly. I think it was...
I think
maybe Future
right.
Shop, I don't know. But I think that was probably pulled from the rumors and not necessarily pulled from any kind of insider knowledge.
Yeah.
But
I'd believe that the original thing on the Miiverse, what was it, like the framework for a community in the future or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, that could have just been a test bed, but I still think that, you know, some kind of Yoshi Island game that's you know, a successor to Yoshi's Island in a sense from Good Feel. That's probably going to happen.
You should make a Yoshi's Island game where on the gamepad, okay, follow me here, on the TV, you see a whole bunch of fruit, right? And there are obstacles in your way. And on the gamepad, you have to draw a line, right, for Yoshi to get the fruit and end up in a room.
You know, I've soured a lot on the Nintendo Land single player 2,
yes.
But as far as just like a, you know, a neat idea, the stupid Yoshi fruit card thing is a neat idea. Mm-hmm. It just, you know, like most of the single player games on that, you're like, play it for 15 minutes, you're like, ah, oh, that's cool.
And never again.
Never touch it again.
Like, outside of multiplayer, I don't really see myself playing too much Nintendo Land. But anyway, the other games that I could see, I mean, definitely F-Zero. I'd love to see a new Pilot Wings. I mean, I know we got Resort, but I'd love to see something on the Wii U.
Yeah.
A new 1080 would be fun.
Oh, yeah. F-Zero?
Star Fox needs to come back in some fashion. I want to see Q Games all up in that shit.
The series I have in mind, it's not been gone for a while, but Metroid Prime sure is going to come back.
I mean, Retro's doing something.
Thank God.
You know what? I will always dream about this. Well, there's two game ideas that I always want to see come back, and one come back and one just exist that I know will never happen. One is Mario American Football, which I think we've discussed before. I know Andy Gergen's on my side on that one.
I'd play that.
The other one is a sequel to Star Tropics, because I love those games, and I believe I forget where the guy who worked on that is. He's in, when I did that feature, which is like what Nintendo developers are doing, I uncovered where that guy was and what he was doing, and I was just like, please, sir, come back. I'm going to go to Japan and just be like, make me another Star Tropics game. I need more anachronistic shit where, like, Cleopatra eats pizza and Sherlock Holmes exists in real life.
Was Star Tropics the game where you needed to do something in the manual
to
progress?
Yep. Okay. There was a sequel. Because the first one was, like, island-themed, and you went, like, to the Caribbean, and then you fought aliens, and there were Tetrads. It was fucking awesome.
I still haven't played it.
You had a yo-yo. It's fantastic. I highly recommend that.
I put it on 3DS Virtual Console, and I will play it.
And then the second game, like, the first one is very rigidly grid-based in its dungeons. I mean, it's similar to Zelda. But the second one, they kind of freed up the grids, where, like, before you would make one space and you would move one square, and the other one, in the second one, you could kind of move freely. And I felt that kind of, like, I mean, it made it less restrictive, but it kind of took away from the, like, kind of the, I guess, the strategy of the dungeons. Mm-hmm. But the second one's story is that you get, like, a book that then you transport through time, and you have to, like, you know, chase the villain, Zoda. Then the name is Star Tropics 2. The subtitle is Zoda's Revenge. And, yeah, you need to go help Cleopatra eat pizza and stuff like that. And it's, nice. I mean, the story is really funny, but the gameplay is not as good.
Oh. I would like to see a kind of a HD 2D remake of Metroid 2 on the eShop, but that will never, ever happen.
Nope. I mean,
why Metroid 2?
Because Metroid 2 has a lot of promise. It was made on a system that couldn't handle it.
I mean, I don't think...
Also needs a map.
Well, I mean, what other series are there that... I mean, Earthbound, duh, but...
That'll never happen either.
Yeah.
I would like to see the unfinished Earthbound 64 that we all got hyped up about because of Nintendo Power, and then it never
happened. You do realize that game is Mother 3.
But it's not in 3D with polygonal characters and shit.
Yeah, but it's the same exact story and gameplay.
Well, I don't care.
Like, if you look back at the old screens and footage, like, it just, like, shit ripped, or I guess, not shit ripped from Mother 3, but the other way around. As in, like, they had developed this world and the idea, and then it just never got finished, and then they just made a 2D version.
I see.
And Mother 3 is amazing.
I still
want to
see the 3D version. What?
It would be interesting, I guess.
N64 was all about.
You know what I want to see? Metroid 64.
Me too.
There was some footage of that, I think.
But, I don't know if there ever was.
Or no, there was the GameCube tech demo.
Yeah, the original Metroid Prime tech demo.
Yeah. But I can't.
Resident Evil 4 Metroid like a motherfucker.
Okay.
That's what it was. It was third person.
So yeah, I think that's about it for listener mail. If you have any more listener mail, you can write us in at connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. And yeah, that's a wrap, guys.
All right.
Whoa.
All right. Bye.
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 Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Don't forforget, you can send listener mail to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com, and if you've got a chance, please rate and review the show on iTunes. Thanks.